With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got all the essentials for comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style you can count on. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and effortless looks. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25.
With James Cook, though, we'd be remiss if we didn't get too far down the line in discussing him, that there is great value in what he does for Josh Allen. So there is a great there's a worth that Josh Allen needs to be happy. You have your Super Bowl window that is finite, and if you want this to drag in for, you know, maybe you need to invest a little bit more in Josh Allen's peace of mind and Joe Brady's peace of mind. So quibble over $1.5 million a year. Okay, I get it on principle. And this is the first time Brandon Bean's had a situation where a player has played this card on him, the hold out or hold in card. And so I just think that the investment, that added element really is worth it. If you're on a team where you don't have the franchise quarterback or you're not a legitimate Super Bowl contender, maybe you're a little more of a hardliner regarding that contract. But when he is clearly the best offensive weapon, not named Josh Allen, I think that the Bills can be forgiven if they did overpay.
This episode of Nuff Said with Bob Kuczynski is sponsored by Chef's Famous Italian Restaurant, home of the Spaghetti Parm and located at 291 Seneca Street in Buffalo. It's time now for Nuff Said with your host, Bob Kuczynski. The topic, the Buffalo Bills. And Bob's guest is veteran NFL insider and investigative reporter, Tim Graham.
Welcome back to another edition of Nuff Said with yours truly, Bob Kuczynski. My guest today, none other than Tim Graham, who is an excellent writer. He does television with WIVB-TV. He does his own podcast. So he's a triple threat.
Against my wishes.
You do, because you enjoy it. You enjoy reaching out.
It's necessary, I think.
I mean, some of it is business, and I think some of it is fun, right?
Yeah. I mean, the whole journalism thing is good. I mean, I'm not complaining.
Right.
But I wish I could just do a few things.
That's what keeps the lights on, right?
That's right. I got to pay the mortgage.
All right. So it's with a heavy heart we taped this today. We're recording this on Thursday. I received word this morning that my good buddy Art Wander passed, 98 years old. And when did you come back to the market?
Well, I came back to the market I first got here in January 2000. The Monday after Home Run Throwback was my first day at the Buffalo News. And Empire was maybe at its peak. I mean,
right.
You would know better.
Yeah, it was cranking.
It was amazing. I'd moved from Las Vegas, and to come to Buffalo and have a regional sports network that was just dedicated to one city and not an entire
region.
The Eastern or the Western time zone or the Pacific time zone. But yeah, Art Wander was such an awakening for me as a new Western New Yorker, this character. And I don't want to ramble on too much because you knew him so well, but what a character. And just tremendous.
He created that character because prior to coming back to Buffalo, he was a behind the scenes guy. He ran as many as 12 radio stations at one time. He was a very serious broadcaster. And when he came back to Buffalo, he would never tell me his age. I now know how old he was when he was working with us, and he was not a youngster. And he created this talk show character, Artie Baby Boo Boo. And I think I'm going to do a whole separate podcast on Art because he certainly deserves it. But so let's move on from that.
Now, hang on a second, if I may, as the guest.
Yes, go ahead.
You said you just learned how old he was when he worked with you because now that he's passed, you just learned just today? Or last night?
I had actually 2 years ago, I had an inkling as to what his real age was, because when he worked for us, now I guess I could have gone to human resources, and well, but I never bothered to, because he wouldn't tell me his age, so why spoil it, right?
How far off were you?
I was probably off by about 15 years.
Whoa!
Yeah, when he was with me at Empire, he was in his mid-60s, running around. I remember we were at a Bison's media event. He was running the bases. I mean, he was astounding for his age, and looking back. Now that I'm older than he was when he came to work for me, but
what a career.
He was just the best, just the best. So Tim, fortuitous that we're doing this the week that Jim Cook, the only sense of controversy around this version of the Buffalo Bills was Cook's holdout, and even Hard Knocks really didn't hammer it too much. So I'll ask you straight out: was he worth the money they just guaranteed for him?
Yes, I think so. The guarantee sounded a lot bigger when the news broke, which is always the way. The agent likes to put out the number, and they will inflate it or fudge it a little bit or interpret it in such a way that it comes out looking a lot fatter than it really is. He wanted $15 million, or said that he wanted $15 million a year. It comes in at a little under $12 million a year. So in that sense, it seems like the Bills are getting a bargain. But when you look at his production, clearly, offensive production, 16 touchdowns last year to lead the NFL and tie O.J. Simpson's club record. But it was after two seasons of four total touchdowns. So you wonder, you know, how much of an outlier is this? I don't think you can. I mean, if O.J. Simpson can't score 16 a year, Thurman Thomas can't score that many a year, all the great running backs the Bills have had, stands to reason that James Cook is probably not going to be in that neighborhood on a regular basis. But he's getting paid like a fairly complete NFL running back, and he doesn't play in a lot of situations where they have to throw the ball or when there's going to be a blitz situation. And I looked up some numbers yesterday regarding that. He attempted 10 pass blocks all last year on 460 some offensive snaps. All right, that doesn't sound like a lot. So you look for context. Anybody who averaged 300 snaps last year had about 55 attempted pass blocks a game. That means they're in there in all situations. Anybody with 400 plus had about 60. So he is a lot. Clearly, the Bills believe him to be a liability in that situation. He played less than 50% of the offensive snaps, because you factor in Ty Johnson and Ray Davis. And so to me, I think that that is the clear line that the Bills were drawing, that you want to be paid like a comprehensive backfield threat, but you can't do it all yet, and maybe never will. So that's where the hesitancy of the Bills were. And I just think it's interesting that you can't use him in every situation, but he's being paid like a running back who gets used in almost every situation.
And it's not his choice to be taken out of the game. The coaches know he's not the guy you want back there to protect Allen.
Might, he might want to be in. I don't know. He might not want to be out there either if he knows his.
Oh, okay.
If he has some self-awareness, right? You know, I don't want to get flattened, or he doesn't want to get beaten, or, you know, just totally embarrassed by a linebacker. But yeah, I'm sure that he would like some different things to be drawn up. But yeah, I think that he wants more than 44% of the snaps or whatever it was last year. But there are situations that the Bills don't trust him.
There's no doubt that he's a game changer in that he's got that extra gear that when he hits past that first line of defense, he can be gone. I mean, they've got some other guys on the team that are pretty quick, but once he sees an opening, he can take it all the way to the bank.
Yeah, the scoring aspect is indisputable. Well, it was indisputable last year. Again, is it an outlier? Joe Brady schemed up a lot of things. I don't think it was smoke and mirrors. I don't think this was when C.J. Spiller had that yards per carry that one season under Chan Gailey that was, you know, flirting with Jim Brown.
Yeah.
You know,
and, that was video game level that year, like, I remember. Yeah.
And McElhenney, you know, type neighborhood. But with James Cook, though, we'd be remiss if we didn't get too far down the line in discussing him, that there is great value in what he does for Josh Allen. So there is a worth that Josh Allen needs to be happy. You have your Super Bowl window that is finite. And if you want this to drag in for, you know, maybe you need to invest a little bit more in Josh Allen's peace of mind and Joe Brady's peace of mind. So quibble over $1.5 million a year. Okay, I get it on principle. And this is the first time Brandon Bean's had a situation where a player has played this card on him, the hold out or hold in card. And so I just think that the investment, that added element really is worth it. If you're on a team where you don't have the franchise quarterback or you're not a legitimate Super Bowl contender, maybe you're a little more of a hardliner regarding that contract. But when he is clearly the best offensive weapon, not named Josh Allen, it was I think that the Bills can be forgiven if they did overpay.
So I heard one or two national folks this morning and complaining about the guaranteed money and what that means down the road, because he won't last for the term length of the contract, etc. To me, I think Brandon Bean, and I think most general managers, it's like, I want to win now. I'm not worried about 4 years from now. I'll deal with that when the time comes. I want to win this year, the Super Bowl.
Right. I think that the contract is out there, and I've been working on a couple other stories at the same time that I haven't really dived in. I always get tripped up on dove and dived, yeah. Right? Dove sounds better. Divin. I haven't divin into. I'm just making up words now. But I do know that his current year was also restructured as part of this. So this could be, when we talk about the guarantees, spread out over the 5 years, yeah. Not just the four-year part of the extension. But there is something that I always quibble with. The word guaranteed is dangerous, because it sounds like when you're talking about a guaranteed contract, like you do in baseball, like you do in hockey, that money, when you sign the contract, you're getting that money. And you get it with the big time players like a Josh Allen or, you know, Patrick Mahomes. But there are guarantees, plural, not guaranteed. There are guarantees he might not get. And that is a roster bonus. That is a workout bonus. There are all kinds of things that fall under the heading of a guarantee that he's not guaranteed.
Right, if he's not here.
So, again, we'd need to take a look at the exact language of the contract, but there are guarantees. So there's the signing bonus. I think the signing bonus is what people would be, that is what is what we commonly would refer to or think of as the guaranteed money. He's got it. It's in the bank. He signed the contract yesterday. It was in his bank account maybe by 4 o'clock last night, if not 9 a.m. today. He's already got it. Whereas that, let's say that was, I think I saw $14 million or something like that. Well, there's another $16 million in this guarantees that he hasn't gotten yet. And maybe, but might not. So we don't know how it's all going to shake out.
You know, the podcast we did last week was with Lou Piccone. And Lou talked about, because he's got a pretty tough story about what happened to him. Now, it was a different era. It was over 40 years ago.
Unfortunately common story.
Yeah, he got screwed. I mean, yeah. He intentionally got screwed. And it took him a long time to try to recover from that. And he never really did professionally. And Josh Allen kind of addressed that this past week by saying, you know, this is generational wealth. And I know a lot of people side with ownership when a player wants to hold out. But the owners are making a gazillion dollars. You know, the owners have been very good, and general managers have been very good at making it seem as though sometimes players are just being greedy. At the end of the day, it is strictly a business, and in more times than not, it's the player who ends up on the short end of the stick.
And in terms of public perception, as you just were alluding to, which is amazing, and you've been doing this longer than I have, but especially since free agency began, when players can leave. Now, it's understandable when you think it through, but Buffalo is such a union town, right?
Right, exactly.
It's all about the worker, the laborer. Now, of course, you're not dealing with apples to apples when you're talking about millionaires, but the principle is still similar. You're talking about somebody who is fighting for whatever he can get and whatever he feels he deserves. And the owners are clearly making a lot of money.
Right.
You know, the Bills were just valued at $6 billion in the Forbes list. I mean, not everybody says that is deadly accurate, but it's a barometer. Terry Pegula paid 1.4 for it, so it's now quadrupled in terms of you know, that you see that the Portland Trailblazers are selling for $4 billion. So a basketball team selling for almost four times what the Bills, and that was a record, by the way. The Bills were set a record not that long ago. So just meteoric in terms of, you know, revenue streams. They seem to come up with new revenue streams all the time. So it is amazing, the phenomenon of the, but you're rooting for, as Jerry Seinfeld would say, you're rooting for the laundry. You're rooting for the colors. You know, if you're, Terry Pegula will always be the owner of the Buffalo Bills. I mean, virtually.
Right.
And some of these guys are just passing through. So there are a lot who will side with ownership over the player. And I've always, I disagree with that. But it's, I understand, you know, why it is.
So you're still, you're there, you're covering the team on a weekly basis. You've seen the change, and I'm not going to get into the change in how the media covers in this market. That's for another time. And I don't, you know, I've cautioned over the first two podcasts that I've done, which, by the way, they've been very well received. I'm very pleasantly surprised.
Why don't we want to get into it?
Well, no, I'm saying I don't want to get into Remember When every week.
Oh, I see.
That's an old man's game, and I qualify. But and I know that I'm, you know, you're trying to generate some younger viewers. some guy wrote this past week, I saw it on social media. These two old guys were talking Buffalo Bills. It was Vic Carucci and myself. He says, I kind of know who Vic is. I have no idea who the other guy is. But that's, anyway, that's just life. That's life. But so you're there every week. I have perceived, and now that, I mean, everything, every interview, every news conference is live on social media, I mean, I don't have to be there to see what they're saying. I have perceived a change in Sean McDermott since the Tyler Dunn scathing piece was done a couple years, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Is that just my perception, or have you seen that?
No, I think that that's accurate. I don't know if it was exactly Tyler's story that did it, but that's when it became most noticeable, because that was a crisis and he had to address it. Prior to that, I think we were seeing a general loosening up of Sean McDermott leading into that, but that turbocharged it, because he had to come out and be humble and show, you know, the utmost humility. And I think that that was maybe some of his best communication that he'd ever done, was in the first couple of days right after that. And I think that he found it to be maybe cathartic, or not to open himself up and to be vulnerable, and probably the feedback that he got from either members of the media or internally with the Bills, maybe under his own roof at home, his parents, his agent, whomever, that he got enough feedback that that's the Sean McDermott we should see more often. And I think that it allowed him to maybe let the guard down a little bit. Now, that seems counterintuitive, though, doesn't it? Because you get burned, or you get you find yourself in a media relations crisis, and your tendency might be to do the opposite and just totally wall yourself off, and I'll just be even more difficult to deal with and less accessible. But I do recall times, especially, you know, look, I don't, as you know, Bob, I don't take things too seriously. We are covering sports. Now, I take my job seriously, but there are moments on the day-to-day of the beat where I'll try to, you know, let's try to have fun here. Like, we're covering sports. You know, even the team, you know, the Bills have done a lot of winning. Like, let's not be, so I would maybe say something, you know, a quip or something a little flippant, and he would kind of, you know, give me like, hey, we're here to work, you know, type thing, and give me kind of a look, and I'm like, oh, come on. And now there's the actual give and take. You know, he's the one with the remark first, and he legitimately seems to enjoy it. There are guys where, you know, it's forced. Doug Marone, you could tell that somebody told him you need to be friendly with the media. Because it was, you could just tell it was a front, and he was doing it to work you.
Yeah.
And he was a jerk to most members of the media, but not to the ones that he thought had leverage. And that would be me, Jerry Sullivan, a John Waro, people who he knew he had. But anybody else, he'd kind of bully him. If you were young or if you were even a female reporter, I think that he felt, you know, he kind of pushed some people around. But then he, and I would see him operate that way too. And that, so when he was kissing up to me or to Sully or to anybody, I was just like, it's nice that you're kissing up to me, but I see that you're a phone.
Right, you could read through that.
And I don't, you know, I don't get that with Sean.
One thing I noticed after the Giants preseason game, he and Dable hugged at midfield, which when the Giants played here 2 years ago, I mean, they barely touched hands. I mean, Dable did not leave here on friendly terms. So they've obviously mended that fence.
Maybe. I mean, that also could be Sean or Brian being sick of hearing about it.
Well, maybe.
So they'll put on a little show. They know the cameras are there. I mean, it wasn't a lengthy embrace where they were, you know, there were no bon mots. I mean, it was a quick one.
There was no saliva. But at least no saliva exchange. Yes, you're right. I like Sean. And first, I did a one-on-one interview when he first got to town because he was an outstanding high school wrestler. And Scholastic wrestling is near and dear to my heart. And I was granted permission. I don't think this would happen today. I think a lot of things have changed. There's a new sheriff in town in the PR office. But I got a one-on-one with him, and we talked, you know, at length about his wrestling career. I found him a very engaging guy. And because we were talking about something that he really was into, he was a lot different than the guy I saw taking questions during the week.
I'll bet you could get a one-on-one with him. That would be my prediction. And it was is because that's allowable now. And that's Sean is – he's been doing podcasts. That was something you would never expect
Sean to do a podcast. Yeah.
But he's done the – he's done Matt Perino's podcast. He's done the Sal Capaccio, Matt Beauvais podcast. I haven't asked only because I'm very selective in what I want to – I don't – of my asks – actually, let me rephrase that, because I hate that the word ask has become a noun. They call it an ask now. It's not a request. It's an ask. So anyway, when I make my requests, or I'm very careful in picking my spots for that type of thing, and I would probably want to do it for The Athletic as opposed to my podcast. But he does these things now.
Oh.
So
here's,
it has been for a couple years.
Here's the last question on Sean McDermott. Is he good enough to win the Bills a Super Bowl?
Well, yes. But we don't know. I mean, it's a guess, right?
It's a podcast. It's your opinion. You've seen him in action.
Yes, I think so. I mean, there are a lot of coaches out there who were never going to win a Super Bowl until they won a Super Bowl, right?
Right. Andy Reid.
Yeah, Andy Reid's the prime example of that. A lot of people want to compare Sean McDermott to Marty Schottenheimer in that regard. Always good enough to get you to the playoffs, but never to win at all. But, you know, Marty had some bad luck, too. I mean, he had the drive and the fumble in Cleveland, and he got fired after a ridiculously lopsided successful season in which there was an upset in the playoffs. I mean, he was a great coach. Sean McDermott's still young. He has Josh Allen. I don't 13 seconds aside, which we still don't quite know what happened there.
We can't get past that, but go ahead. Yeah.
I think that I don't think that he has ruined. And look, let's also remember, too, that was not even the AFC Championship game. 13 seconds would have gotten the Bills to the AFC Championship game. So that's not as – I think people look at that and say, much like Brett Hull's foot in the crease, if not for Brett Hull's foot in the crease, the Sabres would win a Stanley Cup. Well, no, because the game would have resumed and the Stars could have – and then there was still a Game 7 to be played.
And they were still one game behind. I mean, that would only tie the series.
Yeah. So – I think that it has become such legend or accepted as fact that 13 seconds cost the Bills a Super Bowl. So I'm quibbling, but I want to, you know, that's the full context. I do think he's good enough. I think he's a special head coach in the NFL. I think that if the Bills were to move on from him, he would not be unemployed for more than a couple of weeks unless he chose to
he's got a great resume.
Hang around. Yeah. Somebody would want him badly. And I think that the happiest people would not be Bills fans. It would be the other teams in the AFC East if Sean McDermott wasn't the head coach. The thing that you have to, and this is the question that always gets asked, the rhetorical, well, who are you going to put in there? And the line is so long of the can't miss next great head coach, right? Adam Gase got two chances to be a head coach in the NFL. Cliff Kingsbury. I'm drawing. I'm having a brain cramp. The Eagles coach who came out of college. He's now at UCLA. See, we've forgotten. He was the big. He was the next.
Well,
big.
Locals were dying to get Frank Reich in town to replace Rex Ryan, and Frank.
A lot of his former teammates were lobbying the
Absolutely.
Bills front office for it.
And you know, I think he kind of got dealt a bad hand twice. I'm of the opinion that it's the players who win you a Super Bowl, but a coach can lose you a Super Bowl.
Yes,
that's. Sean McDermott does not have anywhere near the resume without Josh Allen, just as Marv Levy wouldn't have without Jim Kelly, just as Belichick wouldn't without Tom Brady. I mean, that's just the game. Outstanding franchise quarterback.
How many coaches are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame who don't have a quarterback who's also in the Pro
exactly.
Football Hall of
yeah.
Fame? The list is very small.
I want to get into Hard Knocks.
I'm listening to you, but I'm looking up this coach's name because
it's driving you crazy,
yeah,
right?
But I'm listening.
But that's what makes you a good writer.
Yeah, I'm listening. And I don't want to leave the audience hanging because they're yelling at it right now. I want to at least own.
Pause and Google.
That's true.
So, Hard Knocks. So, I saw one of the local TV anchors on Facebook, I think it was, Tuesday, with her young son, who's, I think, 10 or 11. And said, oh, we're staying up. We're going to stay up tonight to watch Hard Knocks. Well, and I've been around a long time, as we've established. I can never remember the public being aware and having access to so many F-bombs by members of the Buffalo Bills coaching staff and roster. Because when the Bills do their own version of NFL films, they don't include the harsh language. They don't. They edit that out or they cover it up with music.
You're right, but it's much better than it was.
Well, it's realistic. That's what it is.
Chip Kelly, by the way.
Chip
he
Kelly.
Replaced Andy Reid. I don't know if that brings us full circle. But so Rex Ryan, you know, the year that they were on Hard Knocks was prolific.
With the Jets.
Yes. Yeah. There has been a lot of that, and the Bears removed it. So the Bears were the team, was it last year or the year before? So Virginia McCaskey, the owner of the Bears, was like, we don't want that. So they cleaned it up, and I think that's carried over. So I think it's still cleaner than usual. But, yeah, that's how
– Well, that's it.
That's
realistic.
Guys talk.
I think McDermott has been very conscious because I don't recall
– he's not much for profanity to begin with. I think he doesn't have that in his vernacular. Now, he'll use it to make a point, and you'll occasionally get a bleep in one of his post-game speeches, but I think that's not the way he's wired.
One last thing on McDermott. I keep saying one last thing, but on the Hard Knocks, he told the story to the team before the preseason game about how when he was in high school, an assistant coach came in and threw a chair through a window to get their attention. He made that up. That didn't happen.
Yeah, I'm not going to call him a liar, but I'm going to say that didn't happen.
That, believe me, how many windows can a coach go through before somebody at that school says, stop, stop. But I get it. It's for effect. And the other thing is, and I think about this a lot, these players that you cover, these guys are young. These are young men. Even when I covered the team, I always had this sense, when I was covering Jim Kelly when he came here from the USFL, I always felt, I mean, I was older than Jim. I felt like he was older than me. Just because they were, they had this prominence. They were people you looked up to in a certain way. But these guys are right out of college, a lot of them. Even the veterans are in their late 20s.
That was something that I needed to force myself to realize when I first started covering the Buffalo Sabres in 2001. I was 30. And so I was older than probably most of the guys on the team. Now, there were some that were older. I mean, I was probably, not that. I wasn't that old. I mean, Dom and Rob Ray's on that roster. But there's a lot of young guys on the team. But it was my first time covering the big leagues. I'd covered college sports. I'd covered a ton of high school sports. I'd covered a lot of boxing from when I was in Vegas. But to cover the Sabres, and I had to kind of get over that. I mean, I was closer to age of the most veteran player on the team than I was to the rookies. And so, yeah, that's something it does dawn on me sometimes, though, that they are put on such a pedestal, and you know so much about them. Even with the rookies, because you're covering the draft, You're covering the combine. You see enough of them in college that by the time they get to Orchard Park, you've seen them in a much different way than you would if you were introduced to them at a family function. And there is kind of this deference that journalists, I think, need to constantly work through, some more than others. I mean, especially depending on where you are in your career. But it's something that I really, I teach a sports journalism class at Canisius. And that's something that I constantly need to say. You know, these are human beings here. They're not gods. And yes, maybe you spent your childhood collecting their football cards, or maybe trying to get an autograph. But at some point, there's a necessity to treat them as human beings, and they want that in many regards. Now, some of them want to be treated like gods by everyone, including team employees. But I think when you can deal with somebody on a on the most human level, I think there's a appreciation, and it opens up your relationship.
It is certainly it's obvious that Josh Allen, from a media standpoint, he's now he's at a level beyond. I can't even compare it to the Super Bowl Bills. Kelly was big, Thurman was big, Bruce was big. Everybody wanted their moment in the sun, but Josh Allen is so far above the rest of his team as far as who he has now become nationally. Yeah. And it, of course, he doesn't have the same supporting cast. You know, people like to compare Kelly and Allen and who's, well, look at the Hall of Fame people that, you know, Jim played with. I don't know if there's a Hall of Famer on this roster yet with Josh offensively.
I don't think so.
So, you know, so Josh is literally carrying both sides of the ball, you know, for this team. He's carrying the coaching staff. He's carrying the organization. There's a lot on this young guy's shoulders.
I heard a discussion recently about how Deion Dawkins, and it was based off of the Hard Knocks, you know, what a character he is and how much fun Deion Dawkins is watching him do the drifting out at the reservation. And we won't get into, you know, strapping in the small child
oh,
in the
please.
Passenger seat.
I was cringing.
Or if
ahead.
The Bills, you know, really love this, you know, when you're used to be you weren't allowed to get on a jet ski or ski. Or, you know, whatever.
And they lost a guy from that, but go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
So the discussion was Deion Dawkins has to be in the discussion for greatest Buffalo Bills lineman of all time. And I, it's like my eyes practically rolled out of my head. There's two in the Hall of Fame, Joe DeLaMalier and Billy Shaw, number one and number two. You got Kent Hull and Jim Richer, and okay, I get that. Jason Peters was on this team. Some people call him maybe the greatest left tackle of all time. But that is like the cult of personality that you get and being caught in the moment. That, but that's, you got to really stretch. You know, Deion Dawkins has never even been an all-pro. He's never been considered the best at his position in the league, let alone an all-timer or a Hall of Famer. So, yeah, it goes back to... And we can have this discussion. I mean, how great are you when you play on a team full of Hall of Famers,
right,
like the Bills? I mean, who was zooming who? You know, who helped who out? You know, with Jim Kelly, how could you not be a great quarterback when you have four Hall of Famers around you and a Hall of Fame coach and all of, you know, all that type of stuff? But yeah, I think, you know, Josh Allen is clearly carrying this team. Regarding the commercial aspect of it, you recall how of a certain age, the idea of being in a Nike commercial like Bruce Smith was with Dennis Hopper.
Right.
And, you know, smelling his shoe.
Right.
And, you know, the guy.
Bad things, man.
Yeah. I mean, that was massive for a Bills player to be in a national commercial campaign like that. Dominic Hasek with his Visa, you know, having a slinky for a spine, priceless. You have to go back to O.J. Simpson. That's how big OJ was, the
right.
Hertz commercials, being in movies, everything. He was broadcast.
Yeah. Simpson is the only Bill that I think Allen compares to that.
He was in the Monday Night Football booth while he was still a player. He was doing the Olympics broadcasting when he was a player. So, yeah, that's the only thing that I think comes close, and Josh may be eclipsing that. I think Josh may already be past that.
I just saw, what was the commercial I just saw? It was a Snickers commercial where the father's in the Josh Allen is in bed with his uniform on, and the father, He reminds his dad that he lost to fantasy football because Josh Allen destroyed his team. I remember the Marv Levy Bills. They did a Snickers commercial where they were in a locker room.
Yes.
And it was like, it was, you know, they were like listening to Marv. They didn't understand when he pulled out a Snickers. It was something, the gist of that. Anyway.
Not going anywhere for a while.
Right.
You know, because they said, we're not going to leave here until we can figure out
how to win the Super Bowl.
And all the guys bought into that. They were willing to make fun of themselves.
Speaking of which, on Hard Knocks, when they were kind of looking back and what can they do with Josh, whatever, and they started showing all these clips of the Bills' losses in the Super Bowl. Oh, my God, that's just poor Scott Norwood. It wasn't just Thurman. They dredge up the worst shots of these guys. I wish you could let it go, but you can't. You can't tell the Buffalo Bills story without that.
My quick point on Hard Knocks, because you mentioned how you had somebody in your orbit, or you saw it on social media that somebody, a parent, was going to have their child.
A local TV anchor,
yeah.
Right.
Okay, that's right. Nothing will put that kid to sleep faster than putting on this Hard Knocks, because I have found it to be incredibly boring. Now, I get it. It's the NFL Films treatment, and you hear Liv Schreiber giving the voiceover, and it has this gravitas to it. The super slow-mo and all the techie stuff that they have with their audio and their visual. But I've learned nothing. If you follow this team, other than feeling the hype or the thrill of seeing your guys get, you know, their time in the spotlight, I mean, they have...
I think they're scratching for stories
already.
Yeah,
and they're missing some things too. Like to call Mr. Brightside the Bills' anthem. How about the shout song is the Bills' anthem? Like a song that was just introduced a year ago. I mean, they're getting their little. I don't know. I would expect a little bit more out of NFL Films than that.
Well, my sense as somebody who dabbled in television, so the producers. I mean, they're looking at a national audience.
Yes.
If you talk about the shout song, the national audience is like, what? They don't even get the reference to the 1950s shout, the original shout song.
True.
So Mr.
True.
Brightside, and I don't like, hate to say it, I don't like Mr. Brightside. To me, that's not a football song.
There are reasons that I don't think you necessarily want to get into here, especially if you have problems with the cursing on Hard Knocks. But the lyrics of the song are problematic. It is not a song that you would put the words to on the video scoreboard, but the Bills do, so you can sing along with it. It's not even original. Michigan uses it. Other teams have used it. So it comes from a wedding video.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's a wedding reception song. Yeah,
that's right. And so it's, yeah, I'm against it. I don't like it. I think that the Bills can do better, and they do better because they have one of the all-time great traditions, which is relatively new, but it's organic and it makes sense and it's perfect for Buffalo, and it's the pregame chant that they do. Where else would you rather be than right here, right now? They incorporate the shout, chant and the callback, and it's, you know, it's Marv, it's generational, it's a salute to us against the world. The small market aspect of it, the bad weather, all the different things that Buffalo has a chip on its shoulder about, and it came from Marv. It came from it. It was internal and organic, and so when you have things like that, it just when somebody forces a pop culture thing down your throat, and the fans just eat it up, I get a little disappointed.
No, I hear you. Look, it's Josh Allen likes the song and Knox likes the song, so that's why they play the song.
Dalton Kincaid gets into it.
So, I got to wrap it up, but I want you to plug your many things. Talk about what you're doing.
Many things. So, I'm full-time at The Athletic, as long as they'll have me. And I still have my podcast, Tim Graham and Friends, which usually drops Thursdays or Fridays with my co-host Jonah Bronstein from Channel 4.
Oh, I like Jonah. Good
Jonah's
guy.
Amazing. Yeah. Jonah is, I think, the best journalist in Western New York. And the reason being is he's a fabulous writer, and he is a better reporter, and he reports, he is encyclopedic on so many things, high schools, colleges, which has disappeared in Western New York. So he would be great on his own, but in this vacuum of college and high school sports, he towers.
He's outstanding.
And he's at everything. He's at Bills, he's at Sabres, he can speak fluently on everything. And it really is amazing to have him as my co-host, which is why I have him. He carries me. He can talk about anything and fills all my blind spots. And then I do some work at Channel 4 with their pregame show.
Yeah, you're on the field. You're with the team, and yeah, good for you. So we're going to have you back because you are the ultimate boxing reporter.
Used to be.
No, but you still know. You have so many boxing stories, and there's a whole story to be told about your relationship with Buffalo's own Joe Macy.
It's been fascinating.
And I witnessed the reconciliation of that relationship, which we won't go into now. It was at a boxing Hall of Fame dinner at DePaulo's.
That is exactly when it happened.
And I might have even urged it on that night because I was the MC, and I tend to be a smart ass when I'm the MC. But anyway, you're coming back to do that.
Absolutely.
You're coming back to do that. Tim, thanks so much for coming out. I know you got a lot going on. You got a lot of work to do.
Thank you for having me.
You will receive a gift card from the greatest Italian restaurant on Seneca Street in Buffalo, New York, Chef's Restaurant. Lou Bilaterra Jr. will personally hand you gift card. We're here. And this is your first time in the glorious French Connection
room. I've never been in the French Connection room, no. I've been to Chef's a gazillion times, but... Yeah, never ended. This is a cool room.
This is for lunches and dinners.
Do you have to reserve it?
You reserve it if you have a group of people. I mean, you don't come in here and eat lunch or dinner, but if you have a group of people, you want to do a luncheon or something, this is perfect. And if you have somebody who's a hockey fan, this is Mecca. I mean,
and it's close enough to the front door that you could probably yank something off the wall and get out of here.
Nice. Nice, Tim. Nice. You know, you bring these media guys on, you have no idea what they're going to say. Tim, thanks so much for being on. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bob.
We'll be back next week. More of Nuff Said with yours truly, Bob Kuczynski. And if you're watching on YouTube, please hit subscribe, because somebody smarter than me said those subscriptions mean something, and the likes, and you want it to grow and you want it to become organic. And we're also on Facebook, and we're now on 18 different podcast levels. I figured out how to do that. I'm smarter than your
18.
Average 18. I'm smarter than your average senior citizen. I'll explain to you when we get off how you can expand that.
Thank you, Bob.
Tim Grant. We'll be back. Everybody have a great night and a much better tomorrow.